Hello and welcome to the latest episode of Talking Talkie. I'm your host today, Stephen Dixon, and with me today is the man so good they initialed him twice, Mr. JJ. How are you, Jonathan Jones?
Evening, mate. How are you?
Yeah, all good. Thrilled after a long bank holiday weekend, which the mighty Talkie United garnered 1 point. We're going to discuss a few things on the pod today with our excellent company of JJ. So we've got the we're going to briefly touch on the loss to Yeovil, the draw with Western Supermare, little look ahead to Welling and Truro, but and also a bit of a discussion around Fulham part-time futures, as there's doesn't seemingly not much else we can say on the ownership situation at the moment. So that's the plan of action for this week's Talking Talkie. And we'll just start by, I suppose, brushing over the 3-0 defeat to Yeovil. I joked on my own Twitter account that if we could keep it to three, it would be great. We did. I mean, it still doesn't feel great as a Torquay fan, but we escaped with a 3-0 defeat against Yeovil in what I'm sure we were all hoping would be a top of the table clash. And as we discussed on the pod last week, what that did was took us into the Western Supermare game, which definitely felt like a very important one for Torquay United. For anyone who wasn't there, it was a 3-3 draw with Western Supermare. Torquay United went into an early 2-0 lead before being pegged back to 2-2, then taking the lead 3-2 before finally ending 3-3 with Western Supermare, a side who perhaps were looking over their shoulder a little bit as well. So. I suppose the first things first, JJ, is that a point gained or 2 points dropped?
Oh, that's actually a tricky question, that, because it was a bit of a, it was quite a crazy game, really.
I mean, just to take it back. I mean, I'm literally gonna butt in on the first question I've asked you. Just take it to the start of that game. For the first 20 minutes, I thought we might smash them.
Like, yeah. Yeah, yeah. I mean, I think Western started off quite well. I think they had a shot cleared off the line.
Yeah, yeah.
But then we played pretty well for a sort of 15, 20-minute spell. Archer down the left-hand side, nice little bit of skill in the box. Picked out Stobbs, 1-0, and I think we scored, was it 2 or 3 minutes straight after? Against, I think it was Stobbs crossed it in, nice ball in, and then Arkell Boyd arrived and sort of just volleyed it, side foot volley into the corner. So a couple of nice goals. Yeah, at that point, you're thinking, right, here we go. Nice relaxing day at Playmore.
I don't think we have relaxing days at Playmore.
No, we don't. And it was just a foolish thing to think, really.
Well, to go back to that, because one of the things that struck me was, You're right. Western had that early effort, I suppose, where they'd beaten everyone, but then Moxie cleared it off the line. But the fact that we came back, and again, like you said, Archer showed some trickery, Stobbs as well, with a tidy finish, and then Stobbs' delivery for Jude Boyd's goal. You know, it felt like we had a bit of a plan, at least. And I think I've talked on this podcast before about at least looking like we have a way of going forward. But to put that into the context of the wider game, our confidence is so brittle that as soon as, you know, Western got a goal back, like there was no doubt in my mind that it was going to be a long day at the office and it would, you know, be like two toddlers fighting over a balloon, you know, and see who ends up with it at the end of the match.
Yeah, it was very much a case of looking at that team after you went 2-0 up. West Ham having so much of the ball, they were creating so many opportunities, especially down the left hand side. For as good as Archer was going forward, I can kind of see why he's not being picked first in the first team, because he was ball watching a lot and they were just getting in time after time and we were riding our luck. So when the goal came, it was on the cards. Don't know if I'm a bit harsh on Halstead. I just didn't know whether he could have got down. It kind of just went on. It seems to go under his body, but
yeah, I don't know. I heard a few people criticizing Halstead for that. I think it's a tough one because he's he's played quite well for us in some heavy defeats, which feels like a...
The thing with him is he's got a lot of shots to save each game, if you know what I mean. So I know he made a couple of good saves later on in the game, even in the first half. I think he made a really good save one on one. When I thought, oh, this is going to be 2-2. So yeah, maybe a little bit harsh on Mark, but yeah, it just shows you where we are, doesn't it?
If we go on to talk about goalkeeper errors, it was really the error from the Western Supermare goalkeeper to let Jude Boyd score our third, which took us back into the lead. Really, that kind of squirmed under, and so we have one in our favour there. And I don't think Halstead's was of that level.
No, definitely not. That the Western one for the third goal goes down as a howler.
What I would say is that Jude Boyd earned that with some nice footwork. I mean, it wasn't a particularly well hit strike from him, but he earned it with some nice kind of neat footwork out on that left hand side to get away from his man and earned a shot at goal. And if you shoot, sometimes they go in, no matter how weakly you hit it.
Oh, definitely, he was man of the match by miles, wasn't he? On the day, I thought Jude Boyd.
He's got
ability and. He's sort of got that balance and power and speed, which, you know, most of our team don't possess. He does stand out. So yeah, he did paid well on, I was going to say Saturday, Monday.
I mean, he's a better player than our level, isn't he? Let's be fair. And I think he knows that sometimes in the way he plays, taking on a few people, which I'm not against. I always say I like a player with a little bit of arrogance. So I think he does try and take some people on. So the only chink in the armory of him on that Monday game was that he was potentially at fault for, was it their second goal, where he kind of went in for the ball and completely just didn't get, like, tried to nick it ahead of someone and wasn't there, and it meant we were kind of out of shape on that side of the pitch. But again, it's like you said, our players don't seem to have that knowledge to plug gaps in a way that other teams do.
Yeah, I think for their second, it looked like a foul to me
on Archer.
Yeah, it would have been on the soft side, but you see him given a lot. So I probably feel slightly aggrieved by that, but you know,
yeah, I mean,
they were creating chances. You can't really begrudge them, to be honest.
No, I do think it's, I mean, the disappointing thing is that we obviously had the character to take the lead again after being pegged back to 2-2, and then, you know, just almost immediately they score again, and that's kind of that. I mean, Downs in his post-match press conference said that he thought, looking back at it, he thought a draw was probably a fair result. I think I'd probably agree with him.
Weird
to say when we were 2-0 up.
I think we're having this discussion, weren't we, on the group after the game. It was one of those where you can kind of say 3-2 up with 5 to go. You really should be holding that. But the way the game was going, the way we defend, it probably was a fair result. And in all honesty, if you look at the clear cut chances that we created in the both sides created in the game, Western Supermare probably created and just shaded it. But I mean, even at the end at 3-3, Collins was through. He should have done better, I think. And Stobbs hit the bar.
Stobbs hit the bar with a howitzer from distance. I mean, with those, sometimes they go in, sometimes they don't. I think it would be harsh to pin the game on it.
It was a very entertaining game. But I said to the person who stood next to me when we took the lead at 3-2, or just after, I said, we're going to fuck this up. You just kind of, the way the season's gone and just the 2 years or whatever of just misery, you just I don't know if this was my mindset now.
No, I think I agree.
You knew they were going to create a chance. It was just a case of, were they going to take it? And I thought Ruben Reid played well again. He played really well when we played him away.
Yep.
Couldn't get near him. And again, he gave Asa Hall quite a tough game.
He's a wily operator, isn't he?
He is, because I watched the Hampton game when Asa first got put back there, and he looked like he had Pope Badahunzi in his pocket in that game.
Yeah.
But on Monday against Ruben Reid, yeah, he was getting a bit of joy, and then he just kind of got that extra, just got that half yard away from him and turned and stuck it in the corner. I don't know if any of our strikers can do that. You know?
Well, no, and that's it. I mean, I do feel sorry for Brad Ash. I don't know, it was probably more of a chat from post Yeovil game, but he was so isolated in the Yeovil game. I think there was more of an effort to get some people around him against Western Supermare, but I do feel sorry for him because it cuts a lonely figure with some of the players playing behind you, and even with, you know, Archer and Stobbs, as we said, they had okay games. You know, you can't say fairer than you know their performances. They were okay. Even with the way they play, though, it's hard for Ash to make an impact because Stobbs is effectively, I mean, think what you want of his crossing, but his whole game is yard of space, try and get it in the box, which I don't mind as a winger at this level, but you know. But Ash, I think, struggles a bit with that is in terms of his game. I mean, he's not Jarvis, he's not Nuble, he's not you know, he's not Ruben Reid even in terms of just being a disruptor. I mean, he I suppose he's more in the Rory Keaton kind of mold where he's more of an annoyance for defenders rather than a big kind of burly disruptor. So even in games like that, I mean, you just look like we're missing, you know, someone who can at least bully some defenders a bit, you know. I do feel sorry for him because I think I've said it about a few players in this team. In a better team, Ash would be a good bench player that would come on and you know try and scare some tiredness out of some defenders' legs when it's stretched. But we've relied on him so much this season, and let's be fair, we've had better strikers in Torquay United's history than Ash leading the line by himself. It's quite a lonely path up there for him at the moment.
We have, definitely. It's an interesting one because you can kind of look at it in terms of, he's playing up front on his own and he's having, it is a lonely job up there and he's not a target man. And whatever you say about him, he always gives it everything he can. And I, out of all the team, I kind of admire that out of Brad Ash. Seen a lot of games this year, and I think, you know, I can definitely say he's given everything to the cause.
Yep.
But yeah, on Monday he was, even though at one moment there was like a comically high clearance by Ross Marshall. I don't know if you remember, it literally went like up. It probably came down with snow on it. And Brad Ash did manage to get it down. And I can't remember what he did with it, but there were many other occasions when the ball would probably, an easier ball would come into him with his back to a, you know, he's getting defenders pushing right up against him and he kind of just loses it. And I think there lies the frustration with Brad. But, you know, he scored, I don't know how many goals he scored exactly for Weymouth last season. I think it might have been 20.
Yeah.
I just don't think we're playing to his strengths.
No, ironically, I think I definitely saw the idea behind signing him. I think if we had more of the ball and were a side that was at least camped in the opposition half, he'd be a good player just buzzing around, you know, trying to find the
pockets. We don't play balls sort of through the channels on the floor.
No.
Into space. We're very much sort of a lofted, hopeful ball in down the channel. And a lot of the time it doesn't amount to anything. You know, it's pretty evident it doesn't amount to much looking at our lead position. I know we've been to 10, but to be in this position on minus 10 is still disgraceful, to be honest.
I was depressingly looking at the league table again, and you add our 10 points back to us, you know, 55 points, that puts us at 14th place, just above Weston-super-Mare.
Yeah. It's just our away form. I think Aaron Downs said, I can't remember what interview it was. It might have been the post match, that our home form is fifth in the league.
Yeah.
And our away form, I don't think he said the exact number, but it's going to be close to bottom.
It's not good. I mean, and we need to sort it out at least to a certain extent with the run of the away games we're about to play. We need to try and sort something out.
Yeah.
I did just want to touch on something Aaron Downs said after the game, because it prompted some ridicule, but I'd be keen for your take on it as well. So Downs said, he said that since he took over, he thinks the defensive shape looks a lot better. And in fairness to him, he also said, I realise that's tough to say when we've conceded six over the weekend. Do you see any kind of green shoots of recovery in terms of that defensive shape?
Not really. I mean, the proof's sort of there in front of you, isn't it? I mean, we got a clean sheet at home to Hampton, but they created a couple of really good chances, and on another day they might score them. Yeovil, I didn't watch the game, but
they were a better side than us.
We've done 3-0 there. And Weston were carving us open. Weston aren't even in the playoffs. Do you know what I mean? So it's kind of worrying to think. I was kind of looking at Weston Supermare and thinking, God, this lot are playing some quite nice stuff. So, I mean, Aaron Downs is very much just on the, he's on the confidence initiative, isn't he, at the moment? It's very much just trying to keep mood up in the camp.
No, and I get that.
But I think it's a little bit too premature. I think it's a little bit premature to be saying our defensive shape's looking better, because, to be honest, you know, if it was looking better, we wouldn't be conceding six goals in two games.
No, you're right. I hadn't considered that he was probably thinking from the confidence point of view. He's trying to get a few of the lads' heads up, and that you go on, you've defended well. Is, you know, there's just these little bits you need to work on. Unfortunately, those little bits you need to work on are keeping the ball out of the net.
I would say to the defence, the midfield is, there's just no protection to the defence at all.
Yeah.
Kev Dawson provides it the most, and he was injured over Easter. And there's just times on Monday where a Western player would just pick the ball up, and they just waltz past.
It was
either like Will Jenkins Davies, it was either Laps, and I mean definitely McGavin. So, to be fair on the defence, they're not exactly given an awful lot of protection from the midfield.
How does that happen though? Okay, the last game it's Jenkins Davies, Lapsley and McGavin, but Lapsley's job effectively is a disruptor, isn't it?
You've sort of got three workmanlike players in there.
So I don't know how we're so porous, but we are.
We're still porous. I know. It's just the state of the squad.
And even when you throw Dawson in there, we still like, okay, he's a good player. I like Dawson a lot, but you know, the shape is just always feels like it doesn't take much to kind of get through. It doesn't, and I think part of that's a confidence issue. I do think that. But yeah, I mean, on Dan's comments myself, I actually think we look like we have more of a plan going forwards than we did under Johnson. Whether it's completely effective, I almost don't mind, because my criticism with Johnson was that the plan was knockdowns off Jarvis, really, which wasn't isn't really a plan with the way we were going. I do think Downs has more of a plan, and that's effectively just trying to use the wings a bit more, get Stobbs and Archer or whoever's on the flanks into the game a bit more. And I do think that's positive, because at least it feels like a plan that you can kind of do. And again, I'm really at the bottom of the barrel when just having a plan makes me happier as a Torquay fan.
Yeah, no, I'll give you that. I think going forward, we do look slightly better. I think we're playing more balls on the floor.
And it's a very low bar, though.
Previously,
that's the thing.
No, it is. But there are times when we can play good football, and we showed it on Monday. It's just as a team, we're just so brittle. I think that was the word you used.
No, I was just going to say, because although I think our attacking plan has improved, I actually agree with you. I think defensively it hasn't particularly improved, and I think it's frustrating when you know Aaron Downs was such a good defender for us. But I haven't particularly seen that improvement. We're so brittle, and as soon as anyone's in our half, I think there's partly a confidence issue, but as soon as someone's in our half with the ball, you can feel everyone. I mean, Playmore probably doesn't help, because Playmore tenses up, but you can feel the defence making strange decisions. Like, it doesn't take much to squeeze Ross Marshall into something strange happening at the back of the defence. That side hasn't improved. And I know, and again, I've probably said it before on the podcast, but from chat, when Paul Buckle was in charge, I was more involved in some of the kind of media stuff that we had at times. And he used to always, always talk about shape when we didn't have the ball. He said that was the only thing he ever wanted to drill into his players, was the shape of the team when we didn't have the ball. When the ball's here, you go here. When the ball's here, you go here. And that, doing that for everyone, it's quite basic. But I think that was like one of his coaching tenets as a manager, was, shape, shape, shape. Like, he'd say it all the time, just to have that bit of rigidity. I feel like we don't have it at all as a team. Like, it's just a bit kind of last ditch, try and get your body on the line when they get a shot away. And we're not bad at last ditch tackles. Moxie sticks in a good foot where he can and clears off the line. But
the amount of times Moxie clears one off the line, it's actually, if you added it up, it's a lot.
Yeah.
He does read it, Dino. And like, so, I love Dino. And I love Acer, but
here's the pop question.
There are times when they just look like they're just not necessarily they need to hang the boots up, but they just not fit to be playing 90 minutes, Friday, Monday.
Do you think either of them will be playing in a Torquay United shirt next season as we stand today?
I could probably see Moxie wanting to play on again, because I just think he absolutely loves football. I just think he just lives and breathes it. And obviously, but yeah, it's a tricky one, isn't it? We don't know. We don't know what's going to happen.
I'll throw that out there.
We don't know. We don't know what players are going to be here. We don't know if anyone are going to stay. We don't know if there's going to be a manager. We know if there's going to be a club. I mean, there seems to be shoots of hope there, but
we will touch on the ownership situation shortly, but we'll now just look ahead to a couple of games coming up. So on Saturday, Torquay United travel to Welling, who are currently 16th in the table on 48 points. Welling up first, and although it's an away game and our away form has been, for want of a better word, atrocious, it's a game we really should be trying to win, isn't it, in terms of looking ahead to that one, rather than settling for a point?
It is. Yes, I think we do. It's amazing, isn't it, how we've got this amount of away games left out of the games that we do have remaining. It's a funny one as well, because I think, I'm not sure how many points we're going to need. It might be a case of a couple of wins might actually be enough, given that we've got a game in hand on Dartford, who currently sit in like the last relegation spot.
Yeah, I mean that there's a chance that you don't need any more points. I mean, I don't want to be in that.
No,
in that
I mean,
scenario.
That would be absolutely horrendous, and then you can just see it going to the last game of the season at home to Havant, can't you? But yeah, I mean, a win would be absolutely huge, wouldn't it? A win would take us up to 48. If Dartford lose on Saturday, I'm not sure who they've got, but we'd be 8 points ahead of them.
And then at least
game
you
in
can
hand
plan
as well,
for next
and goal difference. So yeah, I mean,
but if we can secure safety as early as possible, I think it probably helps in whatever kind of boardroom negotiations are going on, even a little bit. You know, at least you could have the financial certainty of knowing what league you're going to be playing in.
Yeah, I mean, I wasn't too worried. It was just I came out of Playmore on Saturday, I said Saturday and Monday.
Yeah.
And I felt like it did feel like a sucker punch. That I just thought, oh, if we could have just got that win there, you know, especially the way our third goal went in, it really did feel like it was a here you go, here's the points, take the points. I just think that would have just given us just that bit of breathing space.
Yeah.
But it was a point in the end. Dartford didn't get anything, so we did gain a point on then. Taunton lost last night, didn't they, against Maidstone. I know Taunton still have games in hand. I think the biggest game out of the ones we've got left is Taunton, because they've still got games in hand on us. So,
I mean, you say that, but I mean, in this weekend, you know, doubleheader almost, we've got Truro on the Monday night. So I think Truro themselves would probably consider themselves safe with the amount of games they've still got to play. I mean, it's a hell of a run they've got to do, but they'll probably think that they'll pick up some things along the way. And Truro humbled us earlier this season. But these two games...
I would snatch your hand off for 4 points. I would take...
Yeah, I mean, I was just thinking...
A win against Welling and a draw at Truro, I would take, to be honest, looking at the table.
What if it was 2 points and we drew against both of them?
I mean, better than nothing, isn't it?
Yeah,
I think the teams we need to worry about the three directly below us who have played similar sort of games. Emma, Eastbourne, Dartford. But
yeah, I mean,
I just think it's gonna be a really tough game at Welling. Like they've had a massive upturn in form. I think the pitch is pretty poor from what I understand.
No, and
our away form has been awful all season. Are we just gonna turn up and just play well on the day? Like I've been waiting for it all season. I'm like, this is the game we're gonna play well. And it just hasn't arrived.
It is some wishful thinking. I mean, the away games does feel like we've got to sort it out. I don't know how we sort it out, but it's got to be sorted in terms of that away form. Because to be honest, we're a side in a relegation scrap. That's the reality of the situation. But you'd look at the games we've got to play, and Welling quite close to us in the table, Truro very close to us in the table, Bath okay, playoff chasing. You can kind of chalk that off, and that's so depressing to say that we'll lose the Bath. And then Taunton right down there, Havant and Raw, Louisville right down there. So you'd be looking at that, being like, look, we've got opportunities to get points, but we're so bad away from home that you look at any of those away games and think, God, that'll be tough. And then if it gets to that last day against Havant and Raw, Louisville, and there's still something up for grabs, that will be dreadful. I pray, like you say, if we can get 4 points out of this weekend, hopefully that's enough and we can just play with a little bit more freedom and a little bit of, I don't know, just hopefully without that dreaded fear that's just, you know, echoes around Playmore when something's going badly.
I don't know the stats on it. I'm sure Matt shared them in the chat at some point. Like the stats on who's been relegated on 50 points. From the National South, and I'm pretty, it's very, very low. So if we can target five, even target 5 points from the games we've got left, that's going to take us to 50. I can't. Is this whether the teams below us are going to start winning games? And
but,
you know,
but you
you've
don't
got
know
you've got
with...
you've got to look at the form and say probably not. But we just need to get points. I know it sounds like the most stupid comment because obviously we need to get points, but just.
Yeah, yeah, but like the thing is, like Taunton, okay, they've got a hell of a run of games in terms of midweekers and you know, you'd think that would be tough on their legs as a part-time side, but you never know, like at this level, that they could just get into a bit of a run and be like, ah, let's just do it, you know, a bit of a siege mentality.
I mean, I think that's probably us just being pessimistic Torquay fans, but no, I mean, they played well against us and I think they played all right last night against Maidstone, but their form's showing me they've lost the last five games. Is that right?
Yeah, I think so.
So basically the only team they've beaten recently is us. Is that basically what you're saying? So says it all really, doesn't it? Because
yeah.
I just can't believe we're here. We're in a relegation fight. We've got like bloody Welling away and
no, but
away, and we're here like, are we gonna get any points? Yeah, it's quite a time to be a Torquay fan at the moment.
That's one way of describing it. I mean, we beat Welling 5-1 at home this season, so you know, I think we did anyway, unless I've misremembered.
We did, yeah, we did.
Yeah, but so you know, Welling, I think, are a different team from then, it's fair to say. But we're not, and I said this last season, this is so crap. Like I said it last season, and I said it for a long time. The league table doesn't lie, etc., etc. But I was like, we're not the one of the four worst teams in the conference, but we went down as one. So like, and we're not, like, if you look at the players on the pitch, we're not one of the four worst teams in the National League South.
But I mean, technically,
we are where we are.
I mean, no, technically, you know, we've had a points deduction at the end of the day, but
yeah,
we've said it earlier as well. Like, we should have more than enough points, even with a pen, to just be like, oh well, we're mid table now, so it's a joke. And yeah, you could write a thesis on it, I think.
We're looking ahead to a tense weekend, but hopefully we can pick up some points. So we're just going to move on to have a brief chat now around the ownership situation about the club. Obviously still not loads to report on, but the Torquay United Supporters Trust as part of a consortium are still in the hat, I suppose, at the time of recording for the ownership situation at Torquay. That's thought that there's still some other bids on the table as well. But a couple of interviews they did in the week raised the question of full-time versus part-time, with one of the members of the consortium talking about that nothing was kind of off the table in terms of that full-time, part-time picture. So we'll just touch on that briefly. What's your take on that in terms of what we should be looking at? And I realise there's a lot of moving parts here in terms of how it will play out, but what would your kind of priorities be as a Torquay fan in terms of full-time or part-time as a club?
So I've always thought full-time is what we should be aiming for. And at the moment we switch to part-time, would almost, you know, be like a real turning point and possibly not for the best. However, looking at how much money we've been losing in the last, well, under the years of Clark Osborne, which are just eye-watering amounts of money, it has to be said. Again, you could go into that and be very interesting to know exactly where the money's gone, because can't have been on footballers that we've seen, because the state of the football has been atrocious.
It is hard. It is genuinely really hard, because to see how we lost the amount of money we did in a relegation season from the National League South, and I'm old enough to remember, you know, Mike Bateson's ownership of Torquay. And okay, it's always been a bit shoestring. I think that's the nature of lower league, you know, non-league football. But like, I don't know enough about the numbers, but the to lose that amount in a relegation season from the conference where, you know, you are still getting 2,000 fans every week. I don't know how we do it is the question. I don't know how we did that, but it does, you know, you would hope with a bit more, you know, a bit more effort behind some of the commercial elements that you might be able to turn that around. But it to turn it around to the extent, like, I can't remember what the specific loss was for that conference
season, it was $100,000 a month last year.
Yeah. I don't know how we've done that, to be completely honest. So there obviously needs to be some significant changes in terms of how that runs. Whether part-time comes into it, I don't know. I think I'm probably in a similar space to you, where I grew up with this as a football league team. I've always been of the opinion that we should be a full-time side. And I think we originally had this discussion when we first dropped into the conference, you know, when there were fewer full-time professional sides in the conference. But I've always been of the opinion that we're a professional side. You know, as soon as you go part-time, you kind of admit that that's where you are. So for me, in purely a selfish way of looking at it, I'd love it if we could stay full-time and then ran it next season and went up, like, you know, playing like a full-time outfit in a part-time league in a way we have not done this season. However, and it's probably the only time I say however, but it's the fact that we've managed to get rid of Osborne, which is a huge plus from this season. No matter, you know, look away from the pitch, to get rid of that ownership regime is a good thing, and gets rid of that cloud that's been hanging over the club. If we can get rid of him, but it means having to go part-time, I can swallow it, as long as there's a plan for how we can come back to a certain extent. And again, people are making the right noises, and if we did have to go part-time, you know, you need to come at that with a plan for how you can eventually get back to the full-time status and you know, eventually the Football League. But that looks a very long way off at the moment.
I think people make really good points. You know, how easy is it to switch from part-time to full-time? I'm not sure, but I think I'm looking at it from the case of, right, we're on the brink of administration, you know, potentially our existence. For me, from looking at that TUST, the proposals of the TUST consortium with the consortium, you know, Michael Westcott, etc. You know, he's a wealthy, Michael Westcott is a wealthy businessman. There's no two ways about it. He's got a lot of money. So the prospect of having, you know, this consortium, we've obviously got decent financial backing alongside the TUST, who are going to, you know, they're just going to have the club's best interest at heart. For me, it's exactly what it's needed. It needs going back to the foundations and going, right, okay, what's the plan here? You know, what's the best use of the budget? And if it does mean that we have to play part-time, then on this, you know, on this occasion, I think I can live with it. Like, he made the point in his, when he spoke to Radio Devon before the game on Monday, about, like, the gulf in class between part-time and full-time in this league isn't that great. You know, we've been played off the park so many times this year by part-time teams. I know you can make the case of we've recruited full-time players badly, which is right.
Yeah.
But I'm finding some of the negative, some of the negativity towards this TUST/consortium a little bit strange, to be perfectly honest.
No, I'd absolutely agree with that. And I think at the end of the day, I know I kind of launched a defence for full-time there, but at the end of the day, if going part-time meant the club could be on financial sure footing for the long term, and that's what it takes, then, you know, fine. I'm a Torquay United fan. I want Torquay United to exist. And if that's what it takes for the long-term vision, you know, to see Torquay United continue to exist as a functioning football club that at least breaks even, because I mean, effectively, that's all you're asking for, isn't it? As a football club, that's the best you can tend to hope for. in terms of your financial performance, then if it means going part time, then so be it. I agree that some of the negativity's been, you know, over the top for sure. Because I mean,
but they're just trying their best. I don't know what this sort of conspiracy theories, and I'm speaking this is totally my own opinion. The conspiracy theories behind the test, I just don't understand them. Like, they exist in case this scenario occurs where we might go into liquidation. They're trying their hardest to ensure the club survives.
No, and in all seriousness, I mean, we don't know a lot about what any other potential bids are on the table. If they're better bids with a better long-term outlook for Torquay United, then okay, you know, like...
Yeah, and the Tust have said, if a better bid comes on the table, they'll step aside and support that bid, and, you know, they'll want to be involved, you know, well, not necessarily involved, but, you know, open up to the Tust, because the way the Tust have been frozen out by Osborne and Edwards is... Yeah. You know, one of the main reasons why people have fallen out of love with the club.
Yeah, absolutely agree with that. So I mean, still interesting times off the pitch. As I said, at the time of writing, we've got no news in terms of the ownership situation of the club. But you know, fingers crossed, we'll get something soon. I you know, as I said, hopefully once we sort what league we're going to play in next season, that will help whatever incoming owner in terms of planning. And getting things going in terms of how it's all going to work. Unless you have any other business, JJ, have you got anything on your agenda that you wanted to discuss?
No, I think I'm good, mate. I'm going Welling on Saturday, even though there's train strikes. So I'll see any goals there.
We'll see if you make it to Welling, I guess. The normal question I ask when I'm hosting in the any other business bit is, JJ, what are your views on airline food? Is it good enough?
I can't remember the last time I had anything on a plane, because you've got to buy it, haven't you? It's too expensive, so I just ignore it.
You're a very different man than some of our other hosts who tell me that they're flying in first class, I'm sure.
Nah, I can't remember the last time.
They're real cutlery. This has been another episode of Talking Torquay. Thank you for joining me, JJ.
Thanks, mate.
And I've been Stephen Dixon. Thank you very much.